Hello, fellow Taurian. Welcome to Open the Iris. I'm Rick, and with me, as always, is the mighty Ro. How are you tonight?
What's up? I'm great. How are you?
Just dandy. And I want to wish you a very happy Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Woo-woo, yeah. Asian Pacifica. Yes, I am Asian and Pacifica. I am Filipino, Guamanian, and Japanese. So shout out to all my peoples. Love y'all.
And all y'all out there with the Asian and Pacific Islander in you, or that's your deal, groovy. I love you all and glad you're listening. So, okay, now let's talk about Norse people.
Oh my God, hilarious. Okay, let's do this.
Okay, so tonight we're talking about, no, it's not Ascension, it's Red Sky. I forgot to change the title on my document here. Red Sky, Season 5, Episode 5, aired July 27th, 2001, IMDb rating of 7.3, written by Ronald Wilkerson, directed by Martin Wood. We are inside the wormhole, which we haven't seen for a while, and are then violently tossed out of the Stargate along with the rest of SG-1, and we tumble on the ground amidst baskets of fruit. Jack gets up and asks Sam what gives, and she says that they thought they had figured out how to prevent the rough ride that we used to see in the first couple of episodes, but they did need to bypass some dialing protocols to get a lock on this planet, P39-865. I don't know why I said the dash. We never say that before. So that probably caused the unpleasant landing. The planet is very bright due to it being closer to its star. Daniel finds a stone carving that has runes similar to what they found in Sumeria, see Thor's hammer. And they wonder if this is an Asgard-protected planet. They notice there is no Thor's hammer, because Teal'c hasn't been swatted by it, but it is if it's protected by the treaty, then they wouldn't necessarily need one. While they ponder this, a group of villagers approaches, and their leader, Elrad, leader of the Katao, and I thought up until this afternoon that that was Al from Tool Time, but it's not.
He does kind of look at it, so I will give you that, but that's funny.
When I looked him up, I was like, that's gotta be, and it wasn't, so. Elrad, leader of the Katao, introduces himself, saying they were on their way to morning prayers when they saw a great wave burst forth from the annulus. Jack likes the word annulus a little too much, and we learn far more about him than we ever wanted to know. They are not pleased to see Teal'c, but Jack says that Thor loves Teal'c. Upon invoking the name of Thor, the people rejoice and welcome the team. They say that any friend of Thor's is a friend of theirs. They lead them to the village, which looks a lot like Colonial Williamsburg. Elrad introduces the team to Brother Malkus, the requisite grump and fearmonger. Malkus says the visitors must leave immediately, but Elrad tries to convince Malkus that SG-1 are friends of the gods. Malkus won't be swayed and storms off. Elrad apologizes, saying that Malkus has a suspicious nature, and that the village has never before been visited by elves, a description Jack isn't sure about. Daniel explains that in Norse mythology, Freyr was the ruler of the elves, who could bring good or bad tidings. Jack grins tightly, and Elrad says he certainly hopes they have come to wish the villagers well. Right on cue, the sun suddenly turns blood red and grows very dim. Carter is puzzled, and Malkus points a finger and says, "You did this!" Jack says, "They didn't. Did we?" Sam isn't sure. Malkus points out that it happened moments after the team arrived and says, "The elves are harbingers of our doom." And after what may be the longest prologue in SG-1 history, roll the credits. I haven't timed it, but I think that's got to be one of the longest opening scenes.
I didn't even think about that.
Malkus wants to drive SG-1 away, but Elrad says the darkening of the Eye of Odin is the will of the gods and not the messenger's fault, and he goes to the Hall of Wisdom to pray for forgiveness. Sam tells Jack that the sun spectrum has shifted toward the infrared, which will eventually kill all the plant life, thus killing everything else on the planet. She can't tell why, but the Malp has better sensors, so Jack sends her back to the annulus, again with way too pleased of a smirk, to see what she can find out, while he and Daniel go to the Hall of Wisdom. Elrad is praying, but stops when Jack and Daniel enter. Malkus tells them to fuck off, but Elrad wants to know what they have to say. Daniel asks if they ever speak to Freyr directly. Elrad says that Freyr always hears them. Daniel then asks if this building is the Hall of Wisdom. Elrad, as if speaking to a child, says, "No, this is a temple." But Malkus and he are about to go to the Hall of Wisdom. Daniel asks if he and Jack can come along. Elrad says yes, and Malchus kills Elrad a million times with his eyes. They stand before a stone pillar and pray, then touch the amber stone in the middle and are beamed to a cave. Jack and Daniel are now unarmed. Jack is not happy about that. And a hologram of Freyr, who looks like Bob from accounting in a Viking costume bought at one of those pop-up Halloween stores, appears and spouts meaningless platitudes at them, saying they must face their fears as they now enter the ultimate conflict, which they interpret as meaning that this is Ragnarok, the end times. Daniel tells Jack it was a recording. No shit, Sherlock, says Jack. And they are then beamed back to the temple where they get their weapons back. Malchus tells the people that it is Ragnarok and that Freyr has told them to prepare for their deaths. Jack takes issue with that interpretation, and Malchus indignantly says he's been interpreting the words of the gods for years. Elrad backs Malchus on this issue. Jack tries to convince the congregation that Malchus is wrong and that maybe this is supposed to be a test of their ingenuity. Malchus is livid, but Elrad contends that maybe SG-1 are part of the gods' plans. Malchus strongly objects and storms out. Malchus is really good at storming out. Mm-hmm. Jack asks Elrad to let them help, and Elrad, clearly troubled, puts it in the hands of the gods and leaves. Sam and Teal'c return from the Malp with bad news. By bypassing... I wrote this shit, and I can't say it. Sam and Teal'c return from the Malp with bad news. By bypassing the safety protocols to connect to P39865, they went through the planet's sun and introduced an unstable, super-heavy element, probably plutonium, into the star, causing the redshift. But you can fix it, right? Jack says. Sam looks very upset, and Jack realizes the answer is no. And actually, that little scene right there was really great, because neither of them said a thing, but they said a lot. It was really awesome acting. Back at the temple, Jack, Sam, and Daniel beam to the Hall of Wisdom. The Freyr Hollow shows up, and while Jack pretends to talk to it, Sam opens the control panel and shuts it down, plunging them into darkness. Then the lights come back on, and an Asgard is standing in the room where Freyr was. He says he is Freyr, and Jack asks to talk to Thor. Freyr says Commander Thor is in a distant part of the galaxy and is unavailable, but he recognizes Jack and asks why he has come to the K'tau world. Jack says they're exploring, but don't worry, they haven't told the K'tau that the Asgard aren't gods. But then Sam explains the problem. Freyr says the safety protocol should have prevented that event, and Sam admits they might have bypassed a few of those. Freyr is not pleased. Sam asks for help, and Freyr says nope, saying it's not their job to fix every error the humans make with technology that they don't understand. Jack gets a bit miffed, and Daniel points out that the K'tau rely on the Asgard as their gods for protection. Freyr finally passes the buck, saying it's not his call. Jack asks to talk to whomever can make the call, and Freyr tells him to prepare to meet the Asgard High Council. Jack is told to step onto the hollow disk, and he finds himself projected into a large conference chamber. At first, he is alone and playing with echoes, then four Asgard appear before him. One wears a fancy necklace and introduces O'Neill to the Asgard High Council. Ooh. The council reiterates that they can't help, and the K'tau must die. Jack points out that the Asgard could have warned them about the possibility of contaminating a star, or given SG-1 a list of protected planets, which the council agrees they could have done that, but TFB. After a lengthy back and forth, they finally tell Jack that if they help the K'tau, it would nullify the treaty with the Goa'uld and open every protected world up to attack. Finally, Jack accepts that they aren't going to help, and they end the Zoom meeting. Sam comes up with an idea that might work, and Jack sends her back to the SGC to talk to Hammond. She convinces the general that if they launch a rocket with a super heavy element other than plutonium into the K'tau sun, it might fix it. She convinces Hammond to commandeer a rocket and assemble it on P39865. He is not thrilled, but since this is their mess, he finally agrees. 3 months later, we see the mostly built rocket on P39865. Malchus is still stirring up trouble, objecting to everything and saying their presence is making matters worse. Elrad tries to calm him, but he remains resolute that SG-1 should leave. In the SGC, the last of the rocket parts and the super-heavy element, Maclarium, which Sam... Okay, there's this doctor guy who... I thought we'd seen him before, because the way everybody's but we...
It was so random!
First time we've seen him, but he's like an asshole until Sam calls the stuff Maclarium, and then he gets all happy. Could have been a whole episode unto itself, but I digress. they're ready to go to P39865 with this stuff. Sam is looking at, and they're, see, she and Sam, no, she is Sam. She and Jack are looking at the rocket from about half a mile away. And then Sam goes, is that smoke? And then suddenly the rocket blows up. In the village, Sam tells Teal'c that someone set a fire that destroyed the rocket and killed two SG members. Enraged, Jack throws Malchus to the ground, but Malchus is unrepentant and says, I'd do it again, even though two of my people were killed too. And then Jack starts punching the shit out of him and then puts his gun right up to the dude's neck. But Alred talks Jack down, and the team leave the square to take care of the dead and wounded. Jack is furious and orders everyone to leave, but Daniel, Teal'c, and Sam finally convince him that to leave now would be irredeemable. Daniel suggests offering to relocate the Catal, and Sam wants to go back to the SGC to run some more tests. Jack says, go for it. Knock yourselves out. Daniel tries to convince Elrad and the people to leave, but they won't. Jack gives Daniel a big helping of I told you so, and then goes into the village square to try to tell the people the truth about the Asgard, that they're aliens pretending to be gods. Now, I know that they're aliens pretending to be gods, and the way Jack described it, I wouldn't buy what he was saying. and neither do the people, and even Elrad has finally had enough, and he says, time for you to get the fuck out. In the SGC, Sam shows Hammond and Jack a simulation showing them sending Maclarium through the Stargate and then shutting the gate off at just the right moment to put the element into the Catal sun. It's got a 1% chance of working, but it's all they got left. They load the element onto a MALP, and they shut the gate off at the proposed time. On Catal, nothing seems to be happening. Sam is sure that they've missed, and Daniel tries one last time to convince them to leave, but they just keep on praying. Daniel joins in the prayer and asks for the sun to go back to its normal light and bring them life and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, it does. Jack looks at Sam and she says, I don't think we did this. And they figure that the Asgard used their attempt as a cover. You know what? I totally forgot to mention why the... No, I did mention. Never mind. Derp.
It's okay, like man. You're doing good.
That's the day. That's the day it's been, folks. I'm not editing any of this out because you all deserve to hear my ineptitude today. I don't know. I may edit. I'll cut some of it. Anyway, I'm Catal. Sam says, we didn't do this. And Jack's like, "Where?" And Sam says, well, maybe the Asgard did it. Without anyone seeing it happen so that, you know, they can have plausible deniability. But either way, Daniel says, they'll never know, but the planet's all better. Let's get out of here. We've done enough damage. Roll the credits.
Yay. Good job. It's okay, man. You did great. You did great. It was good times.
I got to tell you, I was not looking forward to doing the synopsis on this one after I watched it the first time.
We say that for like almost every episode.
I know, but I really... Okay. I didn't hate it when I was watching it. But when I was like going back to, I'm going to have to watch it again and write about it, I was like, my first working title for it was Dumb Fucks Revisited. And then I was like, okay, this is going to be one of those ones where I have to write some stuff about the beginning and I write some stuff about the end. And then the middle is just all a bunch of back and forth BS. But it wasn't. This is actually a really good episode.
No. It's a love-hate for me. I love it because I got to see more of the Asgards. And I'm like, yay. Really, you know, just F the people of Catal. Like, I mean, even, what's his name? Elrad, the nice guy. So, it's a love-hate because more hate, well, the hate is basically, it's just too relevant in regards to dealing with the people of Catal and people who are religious and whatever. I mean, there's a few gripes I have. So number one, we didn't see children until after they visited Thor or visited Freyr, I believe. I just like, at first I was like, where are all the children? Look at all these elder puritanical type Plymouth Rock.
Yeah.
Rock village of white people. Oh yeah, I mean, you mostly saw old guys with beards, long gray beards, and just women. I mean, there were some young women, but eventually you saw children, but there really wasn't a lot of children, and there's no teenagers. So, I mean, yeah, it's casting for the same, you know, budget and things like that, but it was kind of weird that, like, you know, that you eventually saw children. And two, I'm just tired of religious people and fundamentals just ruining things for everyone without using any rational thought. And but at the same time, it's just like, whatever. So that's like, it just, you know, just with current events and, well, not current events. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's why I wasn't looking forward to going back to it, because I, you know, I watched it. The first time I watched it was, you know, shortly after we did the last one, which, yeah, I'm sorry, I just put it out yesterday.
Cause, oh, it's okay. It's cool.
But that's exactly, I was like, oh, here we go with, you know, how many times does SG-1 going to go back to this well of going to a hyper-religious planet and dealing, you know, but the two things that took the curse off of it for me, one was Elrad. The fact that he was, you know, I don't know if you I have a few religious friends that are incredibly rational people. And I, you know, I'm gonna call out Greg Blanchard.
I was gonna say if he's listening. Too.
Greg, yes, Greg is Greg. Awesome.
Yes, he is.
And Brandon Nuccio also. You know, they are really great people. They are very devout and religious, but they are not dogmatic. And that's what I liked about Elrad, is that, you know, yes, he was, you know, totally a priest for all intents and purposes. But he was also reasonable and willing to listen. And, you know, when we had Malkus, who was the, you know, heretics, evil, begone, villain. And, you know, and he was like, dude, chill. Let's just relax. And
so the guy who plays Malkus, I was like, this guy is familiar. I've seen him. So I'm pretty sure I've seen him in Scandal. He's also in Straight Outta Compton. But what I remember him the most from is True Blood. He is an in the closet politician that has sex with, oh god, what's his name in True Blood? I can't remember his name, but he's the best in True Blood. Let me look at this up real quick. Oh god, Lafayette. And
okay,
it's just it's so great, and it's just, I mean, it's just funny that he I was just like, he does just have one of those faces that you just want to be like, you just want to choke. So, but yeah, no, Malka's. Yeah, Malka's got my last nerve. I'm like, but his role, his character is so perfect to represent like those kind of those fundamentalists that refuse to be pragmatic and rather be dogmatic. So
yeah,
it's very frustrating dealing with those types of closed-mindedness in regards to that. I mean, if you love religion, that's great. You have your faith, but at the same time, faith honestly can blind you. So that's my gripe. But honestly, I'm not gonna lie. I was just like, why don't you just kill him, Jack? Just go ahead, yeah, go. Click, click, bang, bang. Just like, maybe just a couple more punches to, like, where's the blood? Like, I would have broken some bones or something, you know? So, I mean, apparently he's gonna get punished, but at the same time, we don't know what he's gonna be punished for. We don't know their rules and things like that. But, you know, we got to see more of the Asgard, which is really cool. More characters. I'm not sure if we're gonna be able to see them anymore in the future. I'm pretty sure we might.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, okay. We're not done with the Asgard by a long shot.
Also, also the ending right after Jackson did his prayer, the sun came back, and it makes me wonder, like, will these stupid people think that it was him that did it? I doubt it. What?
Well, I think that was the ambiguity of it was.
Yeah.
You know, they caused the problem, and it, you know, and it was like right after they said, you know, you're gonna cause us doom, and then. And then at the end, it was the other way around. You know, bring us back to light and amen. All right, I'm out of here. Boom, everything's all better.
Yeah, also, I want to point out, like, I feel like, I don't know, because again, I have not watched any of the series, is I feel like the fact that they took this rocket and lost it, it all got exploded and lost two service members' lives, I feel like it's going to come back somehow to blow in their faces.
I think it should.
you think it should, but if it doesn't, I'm a little bit disappointed, but it would make sense if it did. So hopefully, I mean, especially what we had for the last two episodes with Q. So, you know, that's just my thoughts. I'm like, you know, if you had those episodes with Q just coming down on you, and then you have something like this, you'd think it does. But so that's one of my predictions. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but we will see.
I honestly, and I'm not being coy here, I can neither confirm nor deny it because I have no idea. But I'll be honest, I'll be surprised if it does.
Yeah, also, I mean, there is a lot of good lines in here, but at the same time, like, geez, O'Neill was such a kind of a jerk to Carter.
He's been being that a lot lately.
Yeah, like, just, Carter is just doing her job, and he's mm-hmm. just like, whatever. I'm just like, I gotta be so, like, you gotta, and like, he's, we're used to his snark, but he was being a little extra snarky. I don't know, but it's just, I guess I can understand it, because, like, he was just like, not this kind of a planet dealing with fundamentalists who don't mm-hmm. actually listen. But at the same time, he did break the treaty. Like, he did, he did reveal, like, you know, the Asgards are aliens, but of course, no one's going to believe the stuff how he presented it. Yeah. It's just like, no one's going to believe you. It's all about presentation.
Well, that's why, you know, my two biggest problems with this episode, one is that I really find it hard to believe that Sam and Hammond, without any reason other than we've never been there yet, would bypass, you know, if the gate is going, we're not going to connect there, they're going to go, well, fuck you, you're not. Go around that. Unless that there was a, you know, there was no compelling reason. If it was like, hey, we know that there's a mountain of Naquadah on this planet, then it would have made sense. But there was just no reason other than, this isn't connecting. Well, we'll just skip the safeties for now.
Exactly. That was weird. As well as that whole McLarium thing, that whole, I'm like, are we going to see this guy again? I don't think we are. So no. It's just kind of,
that was so his random. One and only appearance on SG-1.
That is so random. Oh my goodness. And then also, are the Asgards going to tell SG-1, hey, don't visit these planets, they're protected by us? Because like that would be useful information, because I talked about O'Neill said, you know, they mentioned that when he was meeting the High Council, you would think like, hey, we'll go ahead and give you this information so you just don't go to any planets that we already mess with, so you don't have any issues there. Like, that would be great. So, and at the same time, too, with more than like, so do you think, well, maybe, okay, never mind, I'm not going to ask you this question, because, like, you know, because you might know, because, you know, but, like, you know.
Well, go ahead and ask.
It's highly probable that the Asgards did do something to help heal the planet or fix everything. So my question is, will the ghoul find out about this, and is this going to be a future thing that ends up blowing up in their faces to where the ghoul will, like, says, you broke the treaty, subsection 40, whatever, and let's go ahead and fight. Let's go ahead and I'm gonna attack your planet. It's like, I mean, they at least it opened up to that. So there's a lot of, I mean, when you think about it, like, this episode actually leaves open a lot of things that could possibly happen with how the current plot is going in the series, and that's a good thing, because like that's honestly, that's what I was like, okay, what's going on, what's the point of this episode, and I have all of these theories of what might happen, but at the same time, it's like, I would not also be surprised if none of it ever pans out. So I'm okay, and that's fine. So we'll see how it goes, and seeing if I'm right or not, but yeah.
Well, just one thing, I don't know. I honestly don't remember if this comes up again. The other thing that I had a problem with in this episode is that we had an entire village full of people, of which only two got to say anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously it's money reasons. Like, we don't want to pay these old actors, all these white actors. I had no teens, had few children, like, had a fake baby, and things like that. And, like, why was their church so small? You'd think the village was larger. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, it just feels weird that for a small group of people to become this civilized, to be able to actually make houses and churches and things like that, and not grow larger. I mean, because, like, there's just a small part of the planet. I mean, we don't even know how large the planet is. So, I mean, I guess, and again, I know that they can only show us so much because, again, budget. So, it's just, I mean, you just basically kind of had to turn off, like, all of that stuff and just quickly, like, just go ahead and roll with it. We'll go ahead and roll with it. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Favorite quote? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There were several. But the one I'm going to go with is, O'Neill addressing the Asgard Council.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we made a mistake, a big mistake, and we're very, very sorry. But we also saved your little gray butts from the replicators, and now we want your help. I'm not asking you to change the course of their cultural development. Just fix the damn sun. No one will know. We won't tell.
And like he like had like little like hand gestures and expressions like it's gonna be on the down low, yo. And I'm happy that we finally didn't choose the same quote because I think it's my quote is not even on part of any of the wikis or IMDb or whatever on the internet. Mine is between Elrad and Malkus in the beginning when Elrad brings SG-1 to the village and introduces the team to Malkus. Malkus is like, the people will not stand for this, and Elrad's like, you mean you'll antagonize them until they agree with you? I was just like, oh, yeah. He read you. He called your shit out. I was like, yes, like, so early in the episode, like, you already knew right then and then who Malkus was and what he's about. I was like, damn. Like, that's basically, I'm like, you just basically summarize, Malkus is the GOP, so I'm going to go ahead and say that right there. And Malkus was just, like, calling his stuff out, and I loved it. I was like, oh. It was great, and Malkus just and you know, Elrad's like his reaction just like was just so, he was like, how dare you, like the audaciousness of it all. So it made me laugh. So that's my favorite quote. I'm gonna stick with it.
Yeah, this is an episode that I mean it's pretty much what it says. You know, there's not a whole lot of subtext to this episode. But yeah, given recent current events, and that's the one thing that just keeps resonating with SG-1 is it's like this stuff, this show is 20 years old and it keeps, you know, the stuff they're talking about keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, I don't know if that's, we suck because we keep doing the same stupid shit over and over again.
Human beings suck. History repeats itself.
Yeah. But I mean, this is you could probably skip this episode, but I don't think it's that. I think it's a very serviceable episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that it does drag on a second watching.
Yeah,
you know, when you're watching it the second time, you're like, just get on with it.
Yeah, just go ahead and watch. Yeah, just watch it. Like, you know, when you're riding an exercise bike or whatever on the treadmill, good times, and just laugh at how ridiculous Malkus is, and know that being pragmatic is way better and makes more sense. But whatever. But no, yeah, we'll see where this goes. And again, I pretty much made all of these thoughts and theories of what might happen, and I'm pretty sure like 99.9% of it is not going to happen, other than we'll see more of the Asgard. But yeah.
and just, you know, and Daniel turning to Sam and going, little gray butts. That was worth the price of admission there.
Yes, very true. But yeah, I'm good with this. Are you anything else to say?
No, I think we've run this one up the flagpole and saluted it plenty, and I have no idea why the hell I just said that. Anyway, folks, thank you for listening. We appreciate you for being here through all of our changes, and I hope you're still enjoying the show. Please contact us on you can try to find me on Facebook, but mostly on Twitter at Open the Iris on Twitter, and we would love to hear from you. If you have any opinions about the show or opinions about what we've said about the show being Stargate, not art, if you have opinions about Open the Iris, let us know. So for now, we're going to call it a night. Thank you, Ro, for joining me.
No problem. No, always a pleasure.
Oh, I suppose we should tell y'all what next week's going to be. I always forget to do that.
It's going to be Rite of Passage, where we're going to be talking about Cassandra.
That's right.
So I was like, oh, I got to talk about her. Cool.
Cassandra. Speaking of going back to something that happened before,
mm-hmm.
Let's hope she doesn't blow up this time. So thank you, folks. We'll see y'all in a couple of weeks. Take care and close the iris.
Unscheduled off-world activation.
Daniel explains that in Norse mythology, Freyr was the ruler of the elves. Wendy's bag.
No worries.
First edit point. Elrad apologizes, saying that Malkus has a suspicious nature. Suspicious. God damn it. Blah, 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 blah. After credit bonus scene. Sam and Teal'c. Sam and Teal'c return from the MALP, not Sam and Talp, with bad news. By bypassing the safety protocols to connect to P39865, they went right through the planet's sun and introduced an unstable super heavily?
Jesus Christ.
Edit point 3.